I hope y'all don't mind if I sit. I have a back problem. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
My former name was Jean-Guy, born here in Montreal 100 years ago. It's a lot of water went under the bridge since then. I have one request. If you guys have trouble hearing, I have a hearing problem, and with these hearing aids, my voice, you know, I don't know how loud I'm speaking. So if you can't hear me in the back, just stick your hand up and I'll speak up. Let's see, I started off pretty much like most of us, scared to death. Everybody was bigger than I was, everybody was picking on me, and I was terrified when I was a little kid, because I was different. My parents immigrated to the United States in 52. I couldn't speak a word of English, and needless to say, kids at that age are very cruel, and I had to learn to speak English very quickly. I also had to find a way to hide. My father drank a lot. I can't call him an alcoholic because he never calls himself an alcoholic. But he drank a lot. He had one rule, and that's whatever you do, don't embarrass me. And I had to interpret what that meant. One day it was funny. The next day I got spanked for it. I never knew what was right and what was wrong. I had a hell of a time. I found a way to escape, and that was in books. Because books are wonderful. You can go anywhere, be anybody you want to be, and you can hide. And books usually have a happy ending. Or at least they did back then. And it was a good hideout. But when I got into high school, things changed. It wasn't that easy to hide in books anymore. A friend of mine introduced me to this wonderful elixir called beer. And the first time I tasted beer, it tasted like cow piss strained through a dirty sock. But it made me feel good. Warmed my tummy, made my head buzz, and I said, I have found a lifetime friend. It made me taller, stronger, my shoulders got wider, I got better looking, I could talk to women, everything was possible when I was drunk, until I puked on my shoes. But that was a small price to pay for this wonderful feeling. That carried me through high school. Didn't get into very much trouble because I didn't have much money. I couldn't afford it very often. But I made sure as much as I could, whenever I could get my hands on it, I drank as much as I could. Escaped my family, went out to California, joined the U.S. Army. I served 3 years. How I got an honorable discharge, I have no clue. They were desperate back then. I learned one thing in the Army. Well, two things, actually. How to shoot a rifle and how to drink. And I was better at drinking. When I went in, a six-pack of beer would put me on my lips. Out. When I came out, I could put down a fifth of Jack Daniel's bourbon and function. I was cool. I had come of age. The first time I ever asked myself if I might have a problem drinking was about 6 months after I got out of the Army. I asked my friend Dennis, hey Dennis, you know, we drink every day. You think we might have a problem? He said, no, man, we only drink a six-pack. He said, that ain't enough to get your mouth wet. Oh, yeah, right. Okay. And that carried me for quite a few years. Without getting into any depth, my first career was in sales. I was an insurance agent. I was a good salesman. But I couldn't make any money. say, I didn't realize that it's hard to make a living in sales working one day a week, because the other 6 days I was drunk. And I couldn't understand that. Didn't compute. So I drank my way out of that career. I got into heavy equipment operating. Managed to get into an apprenticeship program. You know, the big cranes and bulldozers and all that kind of stuff. And that was fun. I enjoyed it. And I especially enjoyed it because these are the big guys. These guys know how to drink. They're serious. And we'd go to the bar after work and start throwing them down. But what I didn't notice was these guys would get up and walk away and go home. I'd still be drinking. As long as there was somebody sitting in that bar, I'd be drinking. Until the bartender said, last call, y'all. And I hated those words. One day on my way to work, I was on the afternoon shift, and I'd been drinking since 10 o'clock that morning. I had to start work at 3. And I was just a couple of miles from the job site, and I heard the train whistle, and I said, uh-oh, if I don't beat that long freight, if I don't beat him, I'm going to be late for work, and I'm going to have to explain to the boss why I'm late for work. So I punched this little car down, one of those little Hondas. You remember those little bitty Hondas when they first came out? Cute little thing. I punched it down, and I almost beat the train. Almost. He clipped a little corner of my rear bumper, and he showed me the spot in the tree about 20 feet up where the car hit. I don't remember any of it. I went out instantly. I wasn't hurt. I had my head banged up, but nothing serious. I went back. The union agent told me, you're out of the union. I said, why? He says, because you drink too much. I don't drink any more than you guys do. Yeah, you do. And you're going to kill yourself, and we don't want you taking one of us with you. See, they found out I was drunk that day on my way into work. That summer was in the early 70s, 73, 74, I think. Wasn't much work in Detroit. I lived in Detroit. And it was, economy was going through a rough time, and a friend said, go to Houston. A lot of work down there. So I packed everything I owned in my little car and started heading down to Houston, Texas. Because I bought a Sunday paper from Houston, and it was like 3 sections of want ads like this. And half of them were construction jobs, operators and so on. Now, the significant part about that, the statement of packing everything in my little car was, I had worked pretty decent jobs, made reasonable money, and I could put everything I owned in the back of my little car. I had nothing. Guys I'd gone to high school with had houses, wives, kids, boats, motorcycles, you know, all kinds of stuff. I had nothing and didn't see anything wrong with this. Went down to Houston, Texas, got there late on a Friday afternoon. Well, that's too late to look for a job. Paper doesn't come out till Sunday. So what do? You check out the local action. Now, they've got different laws down there. You can bring your own bottle into the bar, and the bartender will pour it for you and charge you, you know, a little bit for setups and keep it on the shelf. And that's how it works. And I saw a guy do something I'd never seen before, and I thought it was the coolest thing I ever saw. He pulled a bottle of Jack Daniels out of a paper sack, and he unscrewed, broke the seal and unscrewed the cap and threw it away. Wow. This guy knows how to drink. He's serious. Well, I proceeded to teach them how we drank until a couple hours later, these young Texas fellas, none too gently, escorted me out of the bar with, God damn Yankee, y'all get on out of him. And he threw me out. I had an awakening there, short. But when I scraped myself up, I looked around and I realized the only thing different was the names of the streets. Nothing's changed. Everything's the same. Being a veteran, I went to the local VA hospital and asked for help. I said, I can't stop drinking. So the man started filling out the paperwork. He says, I think we can help you. He says, by the way, you use drugs? No. No. Well, I smoke a little pot, but I don't exhale. Maybe Bill Clinton got away with it. What's that? So they put me in a drug ward. And everybody else was in there for heroin. I was in there for pot. And everybody knows pot isn't a drug, right? It's not addictive. I just smoked it every day. And it didn't count. And I was different. But the small benefit was I didn't drink for 14 months, not a drop. Smoke pot every day. I mean, you got to get through life somehow, right? Got to keep it together. 14 months, and I got a job in Eureka, California, to help refuel the nuclear power plant. I'm not telling you that to scare you, because they're not all like me. Anyway, I thought this was the greatest job in the world. They paid my hotel, gave me a car, new car, all the gas I could burn. They gave me, this is back in the mid-70s, 20 bucks a day, 7 days a week, cash, here, spending money, food. Wow. Back then, 20 bucks a day was a lot of money. 2 weeks later, they fired me. I didn't do anything wrong. It's just I didn't have enough experience for that particular job. But they got me in at another power plant with a big job, a lot of guys, and I could hide in the bushes until I caught on to what was going on. And I worked in that industry for the next 30 years. I traveled to power plants all over the country. I was a radiation safety specialist, and loved every minute of it. During that time, we made just tons of money. My second job, in fact, the boss came up to me, and he was madder than hell. He says, how come you aren't paying cash in your paychecks? I said, I don't need the money yet. This is like after five paychecks. I haven't cashed any of them. He said, they're messing our books up. Cash them. Okay. Then they sent me on another job down to Florida. Now, I'm not going to get into any long, you know, drug thing. I know this is AA. But Florida was the place where I discovered that when it snows down there, people clean the driveways with straws, if y'all know what I'm talking about. Anyway, that was wonderful stuff, I thought. Not too long after that, I had a job up in, the day that, I got to back up a little bit. The day I told you they fired me from the plant in California, here I was, one paycheck, lost my apartment in Houston, didn't have a car, didn't have anything. I went looking for my best friend, and I found him in the bar. 10 double vodkas, and I remember thinking to myself, it's like that 14 months never happened, the progression of the disease. Anyway, that started the beginning of my controlled drinking. If I'm working the next day, maximum two drinks. I can drink on my day off, and I did. And I held that pretty closely for quite a while, several years. I got a job offer at a plant up in Oregon, and I went there, and after a couple of weeks, I walked out of the plant, and I said, wow, I'm home. This is beautiful. Gorgeous country, incredible. And I met this lady, And together we watched Mount St. Helens blow up. That was an incredible sight. Now, she knew I drank a little bit. She knew I smoked pot. That was okay with her. It just mellowed me out. And life was good for the next couple of years. Until one day, on the way home from work, I stopped with some friends to celebrate their anniversary and started hammering down and saluting with Jack Daniels. On my way home, I had a Jeep. I flipped the Jeep the long way, nose to tail. That's hard to do, but I did it. They tell me it was a sight to behold. Wonderful. That's where I lost that. Well, I didn't lose it. I know where it is. I almost lost this hand because both bones were broken. It was badly damaged. And my wife asked me when I was in the hospital, she said, you know, you're pretty drunk when this happened. Don't you think you ought to quit drinking? And I thought about it a minute, and I said, yes, darling, you're absolutely right. I love you, and I quit. I'm an alcoholic. I can't quit. That's ridiculous. Not by myself. I thought I could. From that point on, my wife never saw me take a drink, never saw me drunk. She could never prove I'd been drinking. You know, I'd drink when I went out of town or when she went out of town. Now, I knew, this is alcoholic thinking, right? I knew the only way she could find out, pardon me, the only way she could find out I'd been drinking is if I got a drunk driving charge. I had a bad habit of picking those up. Ultimately, I have a lifetime total of 9. Never went to jail because each one was a first offense in a different state. And this was before they got all their computers wired together. But anyway, I knew if she found out. So I'm an alcoholic. I planned for a drunk driving charge. I knew it was inevitable. So I planned for it. Now, how do you plan for a drunk driving charge? Well, it's easy. If you got enough cash on you, you can bail yourself out and she'll never know. Anywhere in the country, $1,000, that'll do it. Just to be safe, $2,000 cash in a money belt 24/7, $2,100 bill. Everywhere I went, and I went some really scary, scary places with this money. But after about 4 years, one day, I'm drunker than hell. Blink, blink, blink. Well, Mr. P, you have $200 in your pocket. You need $400 to get out of here. Who do you want us to call? Well, you don't have to call anybody. And I reached in. I took off that money belt. They hadn't found it. Threw it down, that money, blap. He picked it up, counted it. $2,000, my, my. Throw something down. He said, now, who do you want us to call? I said, I just gave you the money. You don't have to call anybody. He said, no, you don't understand, Mr. P. This money's evidence. Evidence of what? Oh, we'll think of something. Meanwhile, the other cop had my wife on the phone, and he said, yeah, he's drunker than hell. What do you want us to do with him? She said, keep him. The next day when I called her, they let me out, and I called her. She said, you're not going to be happy. I filed for divorce this morning. Now, what do you think went through my mind? Not I'm losing my home, my family, everything I hold dear, but thank God I don't have to hide anymore. Anybody understand that? You're smiling. Yeah. That's what I thought. And from that point on, I drank the way I wanted. I did what I wanted. And I went... I wound up in a little trailer in Mississippi. I had gotten fired from a job at a power plant down there. And I came into work drunk. and they fired me on the spot. And I was buying my vodka by the case, the big bottles. Didn't have to go out as much. And you know that little plastic stopper they got in the top? The big bottles of vodka? Pop that, so they don't pour fast enough. And it didn't matter how much I drank. It wasn't enough. Not enough. Finally, I figured out a way to stop the noise in my head. I loaded my .45 and stuck it in my mouth. My higher power had another job for me. He told my cat, he says, jump on his lap. My cat had never jumped in my lap, kitten. Put his paws on my chest. I had to move the gun out of the way. Licked my nose and said, meow. And that broke the cycle enough for me to realize I didn't want to die. None of us want to die. We want the noise to stop. And we don't know how to make it stop. I went to a rehab in Jackson, Mississippi. And I don't know, y'all know those hillbillies down there don't wear shoes. What can they teach me? With an attitude like that, they told me, join a group, do 90 meetings in 90 days, get a sponsor, and your life will get better. 90 meetings in 90 days. I've never done anything 90 days in a row in my life. Not even go to school. I did it my way. And after I went to meetings, joined a group, nobody was smart enough to sponsor me. And I used to sit at the table and tell these old guys how to get sober, because I've been to rehab. These guys, all they did was go to meetings. This fellow had 9 years, that one had 7, this one had 6. I haven't got 7 days, and I'm telling them how to get sober. That's arrogance. That's the disease. Anyway, I discovered one day I went back out and just got drunk, really blind drunk. Came back the next day and he said, welcome back. No recriminations, no shame on you, nothing. Welcome back. I went to meetings for a little while longer and went out again. Welcome back. That was maddening. But my times going out and coming back kept getting closer and closer together. So I was going out a lot and coming back a little. Until finally one day I'm looking at this big mug full of vodka and ice in my hand wondering, how the hell did I get here? Right about this time, I had some legal thing to take care of in Detroit. I was living in Mississippi, I told you that part. So I went up and took care of that. And from there, I went to New York, and I had some business to take care of there. And I told my sister, brother-in-law, I could stay with them. I told them, I'm in AA now, I'm doing real good. Wonderful. We're glad to hear it. It's about time. We're supported. And what I did was, I'd come in after they went to bed, crawl into my room, and I wouldn't come out of the room until after they both left for work. They'll never find out, because I'm drinking all day long. After a couple of weeks, my sister one morning threw the door open. She said, Johnny, wake up. You got to drive Bruce to the train. God, you stink. Okay, I don't have to hide anymore. I can drink the way I want. Now, this was right around Thanksgiving, 1992. Flash forward a couple of weeks. December 10th, 1992. I got up, I started drinking. A couple of pills, you know, make it kick off, right? Got my check, cashed it, went to the liquor store, and I picked up a fifth of Absolut vodka. I had money, I wanted to drink good stuff, right? Went out to my, and a six-pack of beer, went out to my friend's house, And I stepped out of my little truck. I took about 5 steps, slipped and fell on my butt. Guess what broke? The Absolute. I was not happy. But then a brilliant flash. It's still in the bag. I can save this. Quick, David, bring me a bowl. And my friend David ran over with his big old bowl, and here I am on my hands and knees, mud and slush, sifting out the broken glass, but I'm pouring it into this bowl when I realize that's his dog's dish. And it's dirty. But the alcohol is going to kill the germs. He's got a coffee filter. I'm going to strain out the floaters, but I'm drinking this shit. I'm not throwing it away. Anybody identify with any of that? Over the years, I've heard heroin addicts tell me they took water out of a toilet bowl. What's the difference? Right about then, as I'm thinking this, these wonderful thoughts, how rationalizing how it's okay to drink this, my friend David looked down and he said, my magic words. He said 4 words. And I pray to God I never forget those 4 words. He looked down, he said, God, you look pathetic. What can I say? That was pathetic. I knew at that moment that it was over. It wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't a party. The time has come. Live or die. That was my choice. I said, well, maybe I ought to live. I went down to the local VA hospital and I did something I'd never done. I begged for help. The man said, well, he says, I wish we could help you. We don't have any beds. I said, don't worry, I'll sleep in my truck. You don't even have to feed me. Well, we can't let you do that. I said, please understand, if you turn me away, I'm going to die. He said, let me check on something. He left for a few minutes. He came back. He said, what are you willing to do? I said, anything. I didn't even think about it. Anything. He said, we got a long-term program. I think we might be able to get you in it. It's 6 months. I said, I don't want to hear 6 months. He laughed. He said, what do you want to hear? I said, I want to hear as long as it damn well takes. Whatever it takes. He shook his head. He said, you know, if you can maintain that attitude, you just might have a chance. He proceeded to tell me things I should do every day that would help me stay sober. He called them, back there we call them the daily basics. I don't know if you guys have that here. Every morning when I get out, I wake up, first thing I do, I roll out of bed, hit my knees, and I ask my higher power for help. I started off, all I said was, help. I figured he knew what I needed better than I did. Second thing, well, I usually go to the bathroom, but I got this little book there called the 24-hour book. It takes me 30 seconds to read today's page. Puts me in a positive frame of mind. The third thing is I talk to an alcoholic about sobriety. The fourth thing is I go to a meeting. And the fifth, which I'll do tonight when I get home, is ask my higher power to thank him for this day, for keeping me sober. Now, I have no idea what part of that works. But by doing that, somehow I've managed to make it and stay sober for the last 13 and a half years. So something's working. I know y'all are familiar with the promises of AA, but I'm going to tell you some promises that have happened to me that I think are even more phenomenal. When I came into these rooms, I thought I was the biggest loser that ever walked. I was a bum. I was no good. I was garbage. I was junk. A man told me, "You're dead wrong, and I can prove it." I said, "Now how can you prove something like that?" He said, very simply, he said, "You're in here voluntarily. Nobody brought you here in chains. You didn't come here at gunpoint. You came here because you realized you needed help. That, my friend, takes strength. Losers don't have that kind of strength." I said, He said, "And you choose to stay. That's a choice. Losers don't have the strength to make that choice." He said, "Have I made my point?" I said, "Yep." And I still believe that. There are no losers in this room. Everybody's a winner. Because we're doing what we need to do to stay sober. Other gifts of sobriety. Something, I like me now. I'm a good guy. I didn't like me when I came in. I like me. I'm a good guy. Things that I've wanted all my life, never knew how to have them, how to get them. I have friends, real friends, more friends than I ever dreamt possible. And they trust me. And they respect me. They know when I give my word, I'll do what I say. Doesn't matter if I want to or not, I do it. Point blank. I never say no to AA. "John, will you cover for me at this meeting?" "Okay. Whatever it takes." And that keeps me sober. Tonight, you guys remind me that we're doing what it takes to get sober and to stay sober today. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic, and I always will be. But with your help, I'm sober today. I love y'all. Thank you.